Amateur presentation.
Naomi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? It's lovely to talk to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I have so much to ask you about Darkest Miriam, so I'll start from the beginning. When you read the first page of Martha Bailey's novel, The Incident Report, 14 years ago, what was it about protagonist Miriam Gordon's voice that compelled you to not only option the rights, but did you think the process would take well over a decade to complete?
So I'll start with the book itself. When the book is a very particular kind of book, it has a really beautiful cover design, which felt like something that I would design. So that's why I picked it up in the first place. And then there's just something about the way the whole book is designed, the quality of the paper. There's all of these kind of images and quotes that come in the beginning in a really interesting way. And then when I read the first incident report, there was something about the writing and the way that Miriam Gordon, the protagonist, thinks about the world and her inner voice that felt just really familiar. It felt like something that I would have written. So I knew from the get-go that I wanted to make it into a film. And no, I had no idea it would take 14 years. So, yeah.
It's incredible. Talking about senses, there's something about the opening shot of the film where we see Miriam walking down one of the aisles, and I believe that was shot in Hamilton. Was that something that was important for you to get down the routine of the character and find that in the script stage? And did you tweak that when you were on set with working with Britt Lauer as well?
I really do. I mean, they say, and I think it's really true, that a film is made three times. You write a film, and then you shoot a film, and then you edit a film. And they're never the same, or in my experience, they're rarely the same. So I had an intention with the script, and then when we were shooting, there was an intention. And then when you're editing, everything changes, because especially on low-budget filmmaking, you get what you get. You have a very limited amount of time, and you're just able to do what you're able to do. So yes, it was really important to understand what her life was like, to understand what this library was like, for the library to really be a character in the film. So that, of course, was really important while we were location scouting and trying to figure out what this library would look like. And then with Britt, when we first got together, we had a week's rehearsal before we shot. And we spent a lot of time talking about, you know, what is her life like and what is her life like in the beginning of the film. And with Britt, it was this really interesting process that really, I don't know, I found to be something that I'm also very interested in, where you kind of use your body as your methodology. And so we broke down the script into five segments, according to where she was at emotionally. And the first segment we called Low and Slow. So we would spend time in this dance studio. I said to her, what do you need? Like, what do you want in order, you know, for us to get through this rehearsal process? What do you like to do? What is your process like? And she said, get a dance studio and we'll just spend some time in the dance studio. And it was like nothing I'd ever seen before. I don't know if I've ever worked with anyone like her before. And she would transform in front of me. She'd be like, okay, well, like low and slow, you know, we would talk. And then she would just literally put it in her body in front of me. And her body would change. Like she would embody Miriam in this very physical way. It was a really interesting thing to witness, and an extraordinary thing to witness.
Was that also an important part of looking at it from not only the physical, but also her voice? Because I feel like the voiceovers in the film are so important to who the character is at any given section of the film and what she's going through. Was that something that you were considering in the casting process of Miriam when you were thinking about who could play the role?
Yeah, I mean, part of what drew me to Britt was the casting director, Rory Bergman, that we were working with, brought her forward, and I didn't know her work. So she said to me, just go and watch Severance. So I watched the first episode. The first scene, you see Britt in a conference room, kind of like on a table. And there was something so energetic and feral about her performance and her voice particularly that I just fell in love with. She has a really particular voice in a beautiful way. And so that definitely was part of what drew me to Britt.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like you're just simply getting exposition in the voice. It feels like a stream of consciousness. And that was another question that I was really curious about in that process of working through the voice. Was there something in the book that emotionally resonated with you? Because watching this film, you know, it's dealing with grief, it's dealing with mental illness. Is there something in terms of the narrative that spoke to you on an emotional level? And did it remind you of anybody in your life that had an impact on you?
Oh, gosh. I think As a result of filling out many, many Arts Council grant applications over the years, where they ask you all the time, what are you doing as an artist? What is your journey as an artist? What is it that you're exploring? I came to realize that basically, like in different ways, I've been making the same film over and over again. I've been really interested to explore people who live in a kind of self-imposed isolation and how they're able to connect with other people in the world, what forces them out of their shell and into connection. So the character of Miriam Gordon, to me, felt like, I mean, I can say that now. It's not like I was thinking at the time, oh, does this fit into my, the thing that I'm interested in? I was just drawn to it, but I think I was so drawn to it because it kind of fits into that pattern of, exploring people who, for whatever reason, live in these kind of self-imposed shells of isolation and how they are forced into connection. So I don't know. I don't think there's anyone in particular in my life that it made me think of, but it was this kind of very familiar feeling theme and way of exploring and view of the world that Martha had created in this book.
I wanted to ask about your friendship with Martha, and did that friendship over the years help shape the film adaptation in any specific way or provide more insights into the book? And what did she think of you adapting the novel the first time you pitched it?
So the short answer to your question is no. I don't think that our friendship had a direct effect on the script or on the film. During the writing process, she was really not engaged with it at all because I just wanted to somehow try and make this into something else. A book is a book and a film is a film. And when you're adapting, I've learned this is the first thing I've ever adapted. You really have to let go of the book and make it into a film, which is a visual medium. It's not. The book is obviously like a very internal voice, and the film is a visual thing. So, I guess out of fear of not being able to let go, I didn't talk to Martha at all about the adaptation process for the most part. As we were getting like very close to production, then she started coming forward, and we made. I decided to take the librarians in the film to library school, and Martha works part time as a librarian in Toronto. So we all went to library school. Britt and Sukian and Jean Yoon all went to library school. So in that sense, she was like a consultant on the film, and she was very involved. And she and Britt had lots of conversations about Miriam and the world and who she was and what inspired. And so Martha's imprint is all, I mean, not only is it her book, but she was really there every day when we were shooting. When she was able to be, she was there. And the crew found it really wonderful to have her around and as a resource, and just as she's such a positive and particular in a very beautiful way energy to have around. So it was wonderful to have her, but no, she didn't really have an influence on the script as such.
Right, but your friendship as well seems like it blossomed over those 14 years in a way that's incredible.
I mean, we've become fast friends, and we're working on another project together now, and she she's been a real supporter of mine. I made my first film. I optioned her book, and then a few years later, finished my first feature film. So she was a huge supporter of that film and really loved it. I made this book that I optioned of hers into a 9-screen large scale video installation before I made it into a film, and she was a huge fan of that work. So we've become, yes, like very good friends, and spend, an amount of time together and have dinners and go for walks and go for coffee. So, she seeped in obviously to the process and is a wonderful collaborator.
That's awesome. And I hope that that next project comes to fruition sooner than 14 years. Because obviously, filmmaking does take time. But you mentioned the art installation, Miriam's World. I was curious to know what insights that you got from that specific installation that helped you in terms of navigating an adaptation. And also, I was curious to know more about if your time at Torino Adapt Lab taught you anything about the adaptation process that you applied to the script.
I'll go backwards. The Torino Lab was an incredible experience. They are an incredible support, and I met some amazing people on the lab, both mentors and people that I was going through the lab with. It was an experience that was really particular and unique. We went to all of these different places in Europe, working on our scripts that was usually in line with a festival that was happening, and we really kind of delved into the process and really got to know each other and each other's projects. So that was invaluable. And when I speak about the separation of book from film, that's really where I understood very clearly that I needed to let go of the book that I was so in love with. So that was invaluable. And then what's the first part of the question?
Oh, the first part of the question was, yes, yes.
So 6 years into having this book, I started doing a master's and I decided if I can't get this film off the ground, I'm going to do it differently. And I was interested as well in telling this story in a way that felt more more true to the form of the book, which is a story told in 144 small incidents. So I decided that this kind of this installation, this non-linear form of presenting the world and the story was a great way to do that. You could, you know, there's 9 screens, each with a different character from the film. So you can focus in on one character, or you can stand in the middle of the room and kind of have this cacophony of people surround you. There were tangible things you could touch, desks, papers, folders, books, and things hidden and, you know, like clues that you could explore. And that, yes, I think it really did affect the film in the end, because it allowed me to be a lot less linear about it. You know, when you're writing a script and trying to make something track as a narrative, it's one way of doing it. But there's also this other way where you can have something that feels much more impressionistic and deals with world and tone at the top of the ladder, as the top rung, rather than plot and story. So that was a huge part of, you know, kind of figuring that out.
Absolutely. I was thinking about it. A film that I would love to see a version of that is Tarkovsky's Stalker. Is there anything that you would like to see in terms of your favorite films or TV shows turned into an art installation that's interactive with the public?
That's a really good question. And I would have to say the thing that comes to mind first is this Turkish film, and unfortunately, I can't remember the name of the director, but it's called Bal, and it's based on a series of 3 films, and it goes backwards through time in this story of this man Yusuf's life. So you start with him as a grown-up, present day, and then you go backwards in time, and Bal is the last in the series, and it follows him as a child. And it's just a very poetic, beautiful film where you discover, you know, what's happening in this little boy's life. And his father goes missing. His father collects honey from the forest and he goes missing. And it's a story about that. And there's something that is so beautiful about the world that's created that I think it would really suit a kind of a nonlinear storytelling form.
Well, that's awesome. That's a great question. Or answer. There's something that I also wanted to ask you. Obviously, you know, I'm sure you've gotten a lot of questions about Charlie Kaufman's involvement. I am curious about that. But there's also another name that was mentioned in the special thanks that I was curious to know. How did Jay Cheel contribute to the production? He's one of my favorite filmmakers and podcasters. And I know he's been very candid recently about the passing of his own father, which also reminded me a lot of this film and the story that you're telling.
So I don't know, Jake. It must have been one of the producers who put him in.
Oh, Jay. Yeah. No, he's yeah. Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That I didn't know that. I didn't realize.
No, I don't. It must have been Julie or Brian who know him. And then I'm sorry, I've forgotten.
Oh, but Charlie Kaufman. How did Charlie Kaufman get involved with the project? Because he doesn't lend his name to just any production. I was looking at his credits in terms of what he produces and executive produces, and it's mostly all of his projects. Yeah.
I mean, some things in filmmaking are really, really hard, and some things end up just being really easy. And Charlie Kaufman ended up being really easy in a funny way. Martha Bailey knows a woman called Eva, who is a poet. And Eva met Charlie Kaufman on this kind of writer's retreat, and they became fast friends. And then Martha asked Eva, would you ask Charlie if he would be interested in exec producing this film? And Eva, before this had happened, had passed on one of Martha's books to Charlie, which he absolutely loved. And so he respected her as an artist and thought that this would be an interesting project. So he just said yes. It wasn't hard at all. It wasn't long and drawn out. She asked and he said, sure.
That's amazing. One last thing. I got emotional during one line of dialogue, and I want to make sure that I get it right. The line is, I don't think I ever cried for my father, but I cried because of the things that remind me of him. Was there a line of dialogue that hit differently in the performance than how it was written, or affected you when you were watching it as a director?
So that actor is an extraordinary actor, and his audition actually made me cry in the room. He is really, really good. And he plays a character who has dementia and who comes to the library every day. And there was something in that line. That line doesn't come from the book. And he actually changed the line a little bit in the film when we were shooting. And I, to be honest, I don't remember what the written line was, but I remember him changing it a little bit and thinking he did a good job. Like, it sounds much better the way that he did it. And it made me cry on set. And there's just something, I mean, my mother has also passed away, and there's something about kind of memory of people who passed that comes to you in this in unexpected ways and intangible ways, you know, and it's like little objects or little things or little moments or smells. And it just was speaking to that, you know, the people who are no longer with us come back to you in a way that is unexpected sometimes.
Yeah, it's a I was thinking about that even with another movie I saw recently called Tuesday, where the afterlife is the world that we live in now. It's just the things that they leave behind. And even, you know, there's this one beautiful close-up in this movie, when Miriam's in the hospital and she is, you know, getting a line of questioning about, you know, administration and you know, her family and personal. And it's just this close-up, and it's there's so much internalized going on in Britt Lauer's performance and in your direction, and you're just letting it sit there. And I was just really curious, what was your direction for such an incredibly vulnerable shot?
So we shot that the first day. And I remember we were in that same university. We made the hospital out of a portion of the library. So we were at that set after having done a whole bunch of stuff in the office. And we just I like to be honest, Britt Lauer, we had spent time together and we had figured out what we were doing, and she is so good at what she does that I didn't have to direct her much. It really was, can you do it again, like maybe differently in the end, you know? Which is wonderful. It kind of makes you feel a bit like, oh God, I don't have anything intelligent to say. But when you just see like great work, it would be a mistake to direct great work because she's doing great work. And we were shooting that close up, and the DP was standing next to me, and it was our first day, and everyone was getting to know each other. And we just turned to each other like, oh my God, we have struck gold. Like, this woman is just so good at what she does. She is so strong and able to access and able to be vulnerable, and appears as if she's doing nothing, but everything is happening on her face. So that is just Britt Lauer. That is the talent and wonder of Britt Lauer.
I think it's an amazing performance, but I think you have to give yourself some credit, because I think so many other filmmakers would want to, you know, lay on a soundtrack or maybe do some cutting in between it. You just sit there and watch, and you're completely invested in how powerfully and internalized that work is and in that moment. And that's what I always love looking for in film. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me about Darkest Miriam. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking with you. Some really interesting questions.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And yeah, I really like the movie. So
Thank you. I'm so glad to hear it.